In this episode of the Legendary Life Podcast, we welcome back former Army Ranger and Special Forces operator, Dr. Mike Simpson. And I want to warn you right now, we get into some edgy subject matter. And it's not that the language is so strong, but the subjects. We talk about the drug war and the recent movie Sicario and how that movie is actually a nicer version of what's actually going on in Mexico and with these drug cartels. We also get into terrorism, and we talk about images and stories from the media about terrorists and what terrorists aim to do and how the average person responds to that type of situation versus a warrior, and how you can become more of a warrior. And we mean that, and Dr. Mike, more specifically, Dr. Mike means that in the classical sense, meaning that you're ready to take action. And he talks about not only the skills that you need to develop, firearms and martial arts and being able to move your body, but also the mindset you need to have. In fact, Dr. Mike has a new podcast called The Mind of a Warrior, and I highly recommend you check it out because he has guests on there that you won't hear anywhere else. He has Delta Force guys, MMA fighters like Chael Sonnen and more, and they really get deep into what it takes to have that mindset, the mindset of a person, of a warrior who's ready to take action, even if the circumstances are a bit grave. So this isn't necessarily a feel-good episode, but I highly recommend that you listen to the entire episode. It's a little bit longer than the usual ones, about an hour and 15 minutes. And Mike goes deep into how to develop those skills, those external skills, as well as the internal skills that builds a true warrior. And I want you walking around out there powerful, strong, confident, and able to protect and provide for your family and for your loved ones. And that's why I had him on today, because although our world is a great, wonderful place with tremendous opportunity that's never been available before in the history of humankind, there are some sketchy people out there, and I want you to be safe and I want you to be aware. So with that said, let's get to the interview with former Army Ranger and Special Forces operator, Dr. Mike Simpson. Welcome back to another episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Rice, and today I have Dr. Mike Simpson back on the show. Mike, as you may remember, was on, and the name of his episode was Evolve and Lead, 9 Ways to Become a Better Man. And we talked about all sorts of stuff. And Mike, if you remember, it was on my birthday that we did the last interview, and I had a couple of drinks beforehand and coffee to kind of bring me back up. But it's really great to connect again and have you back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on again, Ted. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the topic that we're going to talk about today is developing the mind of a warrior. In fact, Mike, you just came out with a podcast, a really awesome podcast, actually, called The Mind of a Warrior. We'll put up a link to that in the show notes. But I was hooked after I heard the first episode on there with the Delta Force guy. Remind me what his name is again?
Right. So Sergeant Major Kelly Vendon, who's a good friend of mine. I've known him for 30 years since I was in 1st Ranger Battalion, was gracious enough to come on and share some of his great war stories. What you heard actually was the edited version. We talked for almost 3 hours.
Wow.
I've saved all that. Maybe someday I can release a director's cut of the unedited stuff, because actually a lot of other minute details in there that were really, really fascinating.
Yeah, and I love your show because it's very different. And just your background, in case you don't remember or you haven't heard Mike's episode before, he's a former Army Ranger. He's a former Special Forces operator, Green Beret, in other words. And now he's turned into a fight doctor, and he's got this great show. So he's able to connect with these guys on a different level than say I can, because, you know, I've rolled with a few guys in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but I've never been a special forces operator. But one of the things how we're going to be talking about today is how you can develop a mind of a warrior and how you can develop some skills of a warrior. But before we go on, why don't you talk a little bit about your show, why you made it, and what the message is that you want to get out with it?
Well, actually, Ted, one of the big reasons that I went on to have my own show was because I was on your show. And what happened was a lot of family members listened to that, because, of course, one of the first things I did is send out the link to your show when I was on it, because I was really excited about the experience. And it was sitting at a family dinner. Raul, my brother-in-law, said to me, "You should have your own show."
Yeah.
And I just kind of laughed it off at first. And then on the drive home, my wife said, "You should really do that. You should have your own show." And I thought about it for a long time. I'm like, well, you know, there's so many different niches for podcasts, and so many of them are already so well occupied, some even completely saturated. I don't know what my niche would be. And I kind of did a couple of rough drafts of things that I wanted to do. And of course, mixed martial arts is a big passion of mine, not as a competitor, of course, but as a fight doctor and a fan. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu also, but I'm only a blue belt. I haven't advanced far enough to be considered to have any expertise in that. So I knew that those were some things that I wanted to cover. But what it all came back around to was a lot of the things that you and I talked about my military experience. And I really did think what could set me apart and give me a little bit more access to some guests and to an audience was the fact that I have lived a life as an SF operator, and that warrior mindset, what it takes to develop it, what the keys are to unlocking it, and how it can help you in everyday life.
Yeah, and it's so important, especially in these times that we're living in. We're doing this on a Sunday. Actually, you and me have both talked a bit over the phone about a few things, and I talked to you about a movie that I saw recently. If you've been paying attention to the news, a lot of violence is going on with Israel and Palestine. You know, violence is flaring up there again. We're bombarded with stuff about the Syrian war and ISIS and what they're doing over there. You just saw Sicario. I saw it recently. We spoke about that, talking about the violence that's going down in Mexico. That's just as bad as some of the stuff in the Middle East, but for a very different reason. Drugs instead of, you know, religious ideology. Now, let's start it like this, because, you know, I think I'm a pretty badass dude in a lot of ways, but I'm not military. I haven't been in those types of situations like you have, Mike, and like the other people who I've interviewed and all the other great special forces guys and armed forces guys. When you see that stuff, the average person is going to get really scared, right? And fearful, and, oh my God, am I going to, you know, get attacked by ISIS and kidnapped and my head, you know, decapitated and all that. When you see that stuff, how do you react to it? What does that make you feel?
So when you talk about the violence, are you talking about my reaction when I see, say, ISIS terrorists, or just violence in general?
I'll put it like this. The average American is going to get that information via the news, via the media. And I don't know where you get your news from, whether it's like me on Facebook or whether you watch Fox or whatever. But when you see that type of violence going on, what's your reaction to it?
My reaction to violence, typically, especially as it's portrayed in the news, is because of my background, I'm very cognizant about how the average person perceives that. Because, number one, knowing they haven't been exposed to some of the things that I've been exposed to. But number two, also being aware, whether we're talking about ISIS or whether we're talking about drug cartels or whoever it might be, they're very cognizant of also about the impact that that's making on people. They're very savvy about the 24-hour news cycle. If you see, there's some of these violent acts recently, especially the ones that have occurred in the Middle East, we're talking Hollywood-level production crews putting these on. So they know how to package their product, and their product is terror. It really is. And I'm very aware of how this affects the people at large. I have two different ways that I think about it from an individual point of view. Number one, of course, as a former operator, you know, obviously the desire for retribution, to stand up to anybody that's a global bully, is a term that I like to use. Also, as a family man, as a father and as a husband, you know, and the desire to protect my family. It's one thing if I were still single and I could walk around with the confidence knowing that, you know, 24/7, I'm ready for any type of situation. It's another thing entirely knowing that you are responsible for the safety of your loved ones and keeping them safe. And we live in a very mobile, a very fast-paced society, and it's difficult to balance security and freedom. And this is something that's come up quite a few times, and whether you're talking about, you know, passing new laws or just the way you live your life. You can't have 100% of both. You can't be free to run around and do whatever you want and go wherever you want and not worry about who's behind you and at the same time be 100% safe, because there are bad people like that in the world who want to do you harm.
Yeah, that's a very important point. And, you know, I don't want to take this into a political direction at all, meaning like who's right or who's wrong. Let's keep it very issue focused, because some things I'm very liberal about, some things I'm very conservative about, and I don't really want to take it in that direction in my show. But what I do want to say is, like, if you look at, say, Mexico, we talked about the movie Sicario. I'd love to get your opinions on that and from your perspective with your background. But I'll tell you, man, watching something like that made me want to go out and buy more guns, more ammo, and get more training.
That's certainly a normal reaction, and I could see that. And personally, having family who lives on the border, that was a movie that hit home for me. And also, as you know, Ted, because we've spoken of this before, I spent a good chunk of my time in SF involved in the drug war. So I can attest firsthand to the type of barbarism and the type of violence that these individuals are capable of. I think that movie certainly was an accurate portrayal of that type of barbaric, violent action that the dark cartels are capable of and that they carry out every day. I think there's other things that some would say even worse that they do that were not portrayed in the film. And obviously the film didn't have time to portray all those things. But I think it is something that we need to be nervous about. I mean, this is directly at our southern border. And again, I'm not going to be political either, but I don't think anybody would argue that we have a very porous border. And it's very easy for individuals like that, those individuals who are committing those crimes, to come across that border at will and to do their business.
Yeah, well, I was doing some more reading and watching just because I was curious about this situation, because before I watched that movie, I was more just watching videos on Live Leak. You know, you can Google Mexican cartel violence and go through the videos and pictures to get an idea of what Mike's talking about in terms of the barbarism is the word you use, which is pretty appropriate. But yeah, first of all, I urge everybody to see that, because out of all the awesome movies that are going on right now, The Martian and The Walk and all these inspirational movies that lift you up and give you hope and show you how to overcome anything, this is kind of something, it was pretty dark. It definitely wasn't a happy Hollywood ending. And it's
not by any means, not to give anything away, but the last scene of the movie, you really feel like you've been punched in the stomach.
That's so did you like the movie, or how'd you feel about it, man?
So I did enjoy the movie. There were a couple of things, I'm going to be honest, that rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. And like you, I like to do my research. And I will say this, that I have discovered that there was actually more to the story as it was originally going to be filmed, is my understanding. And some of it had to do specifically with some of the things that our Department of Justice has done in the last 7 or 8 years, Fast and Furious. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, the gun program to track the people who got the guns from Texas and brought them across.
Right, and guns kind of freely flowing across the Mexican border. And my understanding in the original writing of the script for Sicario, there was an element of that was going to be addressed as well, and that some of the people involved in the film, Josh Brolin, of course, as we all know, has some very powerful friends in Washington, and I don't think he was very comfortable with that being depicted in the film. So it never made its way into the final print. But some of the things that you saw, I think, raised some very important points about the way the system works and about the fact that although we have approached this as a law enforcement issue, the drug trafficking being against the law, the people on the other side of this don't look at it as a law enforcement issue. They look at it as, number one, their livelihood, and number two, it's a war. And to them, there are no rules. the gun is the rule to them. And the fact that we have taken the high road, so to speak, and chosen to hamstring ourselves with red tape, and I'm not going to argue that point. I understand why it's done, but it definitely makes it harder to fight a war, and this is a war. And I think it's very evident in that film, and I think that's one thing that that film very accurately portrayed is this is a war.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it was heavy duty. And I think an interesting point to make is that marijuana, in addition to other drugs, but marijuana seems to be a big part of the cartel's income, a significant portion of it, 30 or 40% or whatever, comes over to the U.S. where marijuana is illegal here, or, you know, it's varying levels of criminalization, if you will, because of the changing laws. And guns and money go back across the border to Mexico. And it floored me to know, with the level of violence going on there, the crazy sort of, you know, the gore and all the decapitations and the bodies and all that, it's Mexico is number one. There's no death penalty there, right? So you can murder a ton of people and not have to answer for it with your life. And two, guns are illegal there. Yet there's these armored trucks with these guys and machine guns and bazookas and piñas, which are the grenade, what they call grenades. And it's just like, that did not work very well with the situation there. So kind of mind blowing.
I'm sure you have listeners who have their own opinions on the legalization of marijuana, and we're certainly in a time now where that's on a state-by-state basis. That's certainly happening. I have my own opinions on that, which I choose to keep to myself. I certainly see both sides of the argument, not only from when we're talking about marijuana as a substance, but also when we're talking about how it impacts the cartels. I understand both sides of the argument in that, but I like you. It's the point of it for me is not to have that argument. It's even if you take marijuana out of the equation completely, I think we can all agree that cocaine, which is another, of course, bulk profit for them, and to a smaller extent, heroin, that those are legitimately a problem. Whether you do recognize marijuana to be a problem or not, those are legitimately a problem. And certainly a huge part of the drug war, especially, and they address this in the film, you know, this used to be a Colombia issue. And it's not so much when you're talking about the centralized control, it's more of a Mexico issue now. But if you look at the pipeline of where that cocaine is coming from, it's still to this day, it goes down to places like Colombia and the Chimere area in the Chapare area in Bolivia, which is a place where I've spent quite a bit of time. And if you saw the impact firsthand, as I have, that it has on the locals in those areas, I think a lot of people in the U.S. would have a slightly different opinion of the drug war.
Yeah, I bet, man. I can't even imagine. By the way, have you seen Narcos?
I have not seen Narcos.
It's an interesting series, very well done, and they use actual footage of murders and situations that happen. I highly recommend that one as well. They actually use actual footage from journalists and show you a ton of things. And it's not a feel-good series, but it's kind of funny how many people like Pablo Escobar at the end of that. I'm like, dude, guys, this was real. This guy did all this stuff. Anyway, I don't want to take this interview in too much in that direction, but it's fascinating because you have this background with the drug war. But back to Sicario, there was a point at the end where I'm sure you remember where he tells the FBI agent, and hopefully I'm not giving away too much here, but he's like, go move to a small town where the rule of law still exists, because this is the land of wolves and you're no wolf.
Yeah, that was definitely a very powerful statement. And the Benicio del Toro character, very powerful character in that movie. I kind of wish that especially to me, and I think you'd probably agree, my favorite part of the movie was the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I almost would have liked to have seen an hour and 45 minutes of just Benicio del Toro's character, because I thought his character was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and more background. I'm with you on that. It definitely seemed like they cut things. That the last 15 minutes and also the border crossing scene, man, that was insane. Really
very
insane.
Very intense. Yeah, very intense.
Yeah, well, that particular, why I brought that up was I heard you say something on your podcast. You said there's sheep, there's sheep dogs, and there's wolves. And if you're in line somewhere and you look at the guy behind you and you can't tell which one he is, then you're probably a sheep. And
exactly.
I agree with that 100%. And what I love about that is it has to do, it's not like, well, can you outlift him? Is he stronger than you? It's more like mindset. Like you're looking at other things. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that? And we'll go from there.
And of course, that description of the sheep, the wolves and the sheepdogs was probably popularized in the movie American Sniper. I think that's where most people first kind of got in touch with it. It's a phrase that I've heard for quite some time. And of course, Sergeant Major Vendon and I talked about it when I had him on as a guest. But basically, and obviously, the majority of people out there living their lives from day to day are sheep. And they're doing what sheep do. They're sheep graze. Well, these people are grazing on their smartphones as they walk from place to place. They're engaging in tunnel vision. They are only concerned about the clump of grass that's in front of them. They are, to an extent, dependent on others. You know, their protection is given to them from others. I'm not saying they don't have jobs and earn their keep, but, you know, they get their information from others. You know, they're from their trusted news source. They get their food from their trusted corner grocery store, and they get their protection from the corner policeman and from the armed forces. But other than that, again, they're living lives as sheep. Living amongst the sheep, and or not far from the sheep, are wolves. And these are wolves in the truest sense of the word. They are predators. They prey on the sheep. They watch their prey. They stalk their prey. They are hungry for what they can gain from taking down the prey. And these are the individuals that, you know, live on the edge of society, so to speak, when it comes to their behavior. You know, that's internet predators taking people's identification are just as much wolves as the person who will knock you down in the street and take your wallet. Probably the smallest minority of people, by most estimates, it's between 3% and 5% of the population. If you look at, you know, say military and law enforcement, are sheepdogs. So sheepdogs have a lot of the characteristics of wolves. They're both canis. They're both have meat-eating teeth, and they both know how to stalk and attack prey. But where the difference lies is the sheepdog is what stands between the sheep and the wolves. And the sheepdog is willing to do whatever he can to defend the herd, and even at the expense of his own life. And his main focus is in taking out the wolves. These are the type of people that live with a 360-degree awareness and live with a sense of things greater than themselves.
Yeah, well said. And one of the things that comes up when I hear something like that is wolves probably know who they are. But
right.
Sheep and sheepdogs, if I'm listening to you right now, how do I know if I'm a sheepdog? You obviously talked a little bit about being on the phone and grazing and being maybe overly trustworthy, but can you break that down? How would someone listening right now know where they stand?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I actually just today I said something, and I think this is going to be probably 90 to 95% true, not 100% true. If you're listening to this and you're wearing skinny jeans, you're a sheep.
Okay.
And that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, you're following the trend. Number two, you're wearing a piece of clothing that is totally non-functional, which tells me that you're a sheep. A sheepdog would never wear a set of skinny jeans. A wolf might wear, you know, you always hear the phrase a wolf in sheep's clothing. So it's very possible that a wolf would wear skinny jeans, but I would say a sheepdog on pretty much no occasion would ever wear skinny jeans. But I think the definition of a sheep and people who are convinced, people who see those bad things on the news that you and I were talking about, and say things to themselves like, that could never happen here, or that could never happen to me, or, well, those people just aren't well understood, or the reason those people are cutting heads off in the middle of the desert is because they don't have Starbucks and movie theaters and job opportunities. Those are sheep answers to those things. That's certainly not something that a sheepdog would say.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, I think saying things like that, I think it gets a bit naive, because obviously that can happen here. All it takes is the will for it to happen here. And certainly if you look at 9/11, to bring up probably the greatest example of all, to back this up a little bit, the reason that 9/11, that New York City specifically was targeted, there is no city that epitomizes the United States of America like New York City. There is no city whose skyline anyone could just look at in silhouette around the world and say that's New York City, the United States of America. So it was a prime terror target. And a lot of people on the island of Manhattan were living their lives as sheep. And I'm not by any means trying to belittle the sacrifice of those that died on that day. But I think it was kind of the epitome of a place where people went about their daily lives, you know, concentrating on going about their daily lives, you know, their morning commute and getting to their place of business and working in their cubicle or in their office building. And that's not just unique to New York City. That's seen all over the United States of America, that people are very, very much absorbed in their daily lives and just, you know, dropping the kids off and getting to work without the realization that, you know, literally in the car next to you or behind that building or behind that bush could be very, very bad people who seek to do you harm.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And the reason I asked in part is because I went through a big transition. Funny that you should bring up 9/11, because that's what started it, like for many people, I'm sure, but for me in particular. And that's what got me into paying more attention to what's going on in the world. And for a long time, I felt George H.W. Bush was president, and he was like, well, they hate our life, they hate our freedom, they hate our way of life. And I was like, man, that is the biggest bunch of bullshit I ever heard. We were in there, we were doing this thing and that thing and the Shah of Iran, and you look through the history. And I went down that path for a long time, and then I started learning more and started getting out of that emotional state. And I started learning about, like, I just put up an article not too long ago on Facebook. I put it up like once a year, and it's written by a Muslim. He's an atheist Muslim is the name of the, is what they call him, but he's culturally Muslim, but not really that religious. And then he talks about how these radical guys, radical is jihadists, they've been like this way before any of the stuff that we know in the modern day has incited them, right? Way before the Arab-Israeli conflict, way before there was any Afghan-Russo war, way before all those things that we know today, way before we were in Iraq, way before all that stuff, they were talking about killing and enslaving people. And I'm not talking about Muslims. I got Muslim friends, by the way, but again, they're the people who cherry pick the good part and just live their life, and they want to be on their cell phones and on Facebook and earn a good living and have a good time and just like the rest of everyone else. But those radical guys, they've been at this for a long, long time. So that kind of changed for me. So when you talk about that, what do you recommend people do mindset-wise to make that shift from sheep to more of a sheepdog? Or is that even something you recommend?
It is something I recommend. And I don't think there might not be the full-on capacity for somebody to transform themselves into the complete epitome of a sheepdog. Obviously, if no one is going to, in their mid-30s, is going to leave a job that supports their family to choose to go do a 4-year stint in the Ranger Battalion to get the level of training and then reintegrate themselves into life, that's certainly not going to happen. That's not realistic. I do think that people can shape their lives a little bit differently to recognize the current environment that we live in and give themselves a little bit more peace of mind and be a little bit safer. And I'm not talking about radically, you know, altering someone's life and, you know, becoming a prepper and moving off the grid and setting up your own compound. You certainly don't have to do that. I mean, you can live where you're living in a major city and just make some small adjustments to the way you live your life that actually not only would they be better for you safety-wise, but really the things I'm talking about, a lot of which have to do with just living a healthier life too, which I know, Ted, you're a huge advocate of.
Sure, absolutely.
The way I break it down is I break it down into three things. I'm a simple guy, so I like to break everything down in very simple terms. And Sergeant Major Vendon and I talked about this. There are three basic things you have to do to be a good soldier: shoot, move, and communicate. three things. And when I say shoot, we're going to talk about that probably last, but I don't mean that just on shooting weapons. I mean that as far as enemy engagement as a whole, but we'll leave that for last because that's probably the most complicated of the things that we're going to talk about.
And the most fun part, sounds like.
And the most fun part, yes. But since some people listening might not even own a gun yet, we'll talk about that last. When I'm talking about moving, I'm talking about moving through three-dimensional space. So obviously combat is not a static thing. We don't do trench warfare anymore. So, and this is true in anything. Anytime that you are engaging a threat or defending yourself from a threat, there's going to be movement involved. I mean, there has to be. The number one key component of that, and this goes all the way back to the movie Zombieland. What was the first thing we learned in the zombie apocalypse? The fatties were the first to go, right?
That was a great movie, yeah.
Yeah, cardio.
Cardio.
One rule. Rule number one, cardio. Yeah. So, and it's true for this. It's true. If you want to be a better sheep or be a sheepdog, number one rule is still cardio. You need to be physically fit. Going hand in hand with being physically fit, say you're listening to this right now and you're sitting on the couch and you got Cheeto crumbs on you and you're not physically fit. Know realistically what your limitations are right at this minute. Know what those limitations are. Could you climb a rope up into the attic? Could you climb through a window and lower yourself down two stories? Could you do something like that? If you were in gridlock traffic, could you roll down your window, crawl out that window, and run along the roof of cars to get away from something? I mean, that's an extreme example, but you know what your physical limits are and be realistic. It's common for men. Men are macho, especially, hey, I played football in high school 25, 30 years ago. I'm pretty confident I could swing through that rope, crash through a window, save the girl in distress, and beat up the bad guy. Well, that's probably not true. So you need to have a semi-realistic assessment of what you can do. Plenty of ways online, obviously, that you can set yourself up with a test to kind of see where you're at. A lot of the fitness programs that are out there that are available on DVD have like an initial fitness assessment you do of yourself at the beginning of those. And I think a lot of those that have that are the better programs, actually, because they give you a gauge to measure your fitness at the beginning and after you've progressed at some point.
Yeah. And what do you either do or what do you recommend people do when they come to you for fitness advice?
The number one thing that I always tell people is do something that you're going to enjoy. If you absolutely hate something, you're not going to stick with it. I absolutely hate running. I've always absolutely hated
running. Second that.
You know, yeah it's, you know, a couple of reasons. Number one, running breeds cowardice, right? So, and the phrase that an old friend of mine used to always use, I don't have to run, I can fight, okay? Those are real macho things to say. Running is a great way to build cardio, and by all means, if you're somebody who enjoys running, running is a great way to go. I don't like it. I like more high-intensity intervals type stuff. I use, currently at this stage in my life, I tend to use martial arts as my physical fitness asset, which brings us into another thing that goes hand-in-hand with that, which is the whole martial arts aspect of it. Not only is it a great way to get in shape, but you're sharpening your tools that we're going to talk about when we talk about the shoot aspect of this. So I use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai as my number one ways to keep in shape. And I also temper that with some yoga because I'm getting a little bit older. And I think yoga is a great way to keep the body healthy. A lot of core strength, a lot of flexibility. Use muscles you don't normally use on a day-to-day basis. Those same muscles that when the zombie apocalypse actually goes down, you might find yourself using. So I think yoga is a great, great way to build up your core strength. Use a lot of what we call the proprioceptive muscles that you don't normally use that I think are awesome.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm doing something a bit differently, but I'm really into this gymnastic style training right now, and it's helping me get my mobility back and some other stuff. But man, that's, yeah, of course, you're in great shape and you're a medical doctor and you have this great background in special forces. So if you're interested in getting in shape, listening to that, applying the things that Mike just shared will help you a lot. So cool. Anything else to add to that?
One real quick other thing on fitness is I am an advocate of CrossFit and CrossFit-like programs. I know I've made jokes about them in the past. I'm sure you have too, but they are very motivating and they are great all-around workouts. There's a reason that the CrossFit people look the way they look. They're really healthy. And if it's something you enjoy, I am an advocate of CrossFit.
Yeah, I've got zero hate for CrossFit. I think, in fact, I just told you about the gymnastic style training that I'm doing and like I'm in love with right now, Mike. It's been a while since I really been in love with my fitness program. I would not have known about the guy. His name's Christopher Summers and gymnasticbodies.com for anybody who's wondering. But I would not know about him had it not been for CrossFit. And especially CrossFit has taken a lot of people who have been cardio bunnies and got them lifting weights and doing really intense style workouts. And I'm all for that. Yeah, I mean, if, you know, I don't pick on CrossFit because I think it's done more good than harm. Of course, you know, there's probably plenty of bad personal trainers that have injured people. And I could name some right now that I know personally that one guy fractured this girl's ankle by doing high rep box jumps. And he's not a CrossFit guy. He's just probably a guy who watched CrossFit videos on YouTube and try to do it.
Right.
But yeah, awesome. And also Mark Devine is huge into CrossFit. In fact, he has a thing called Seal Fit, which is based on CrossFit. So I mean, there's some great athletes in CrossFit and yeah, don't really have any hate for them, but except the douchey ones, Mike.
And they're out there.
They're out there. I nearly had to, I asked a guy to step outside one time when he, and wrestle, not fight, right? Just wrestle. Right. When he said, oh, he was trying to get me to go to CrossFit. It was weird. It was cult-like. Like he's like, oh man, you got to go to CrossFit, man. I'm like, dude, I was training for a Brazilian jiu-jitsu in advance. I was competing in advanced in Naga. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? I'm like, dude, I'm training for a Brazilian jiu-jitsu competition. I'm doing my own style of training. I don't have any time for that. He's like, man, I think you're just scared. I was like, well, why don't we go outside, lock horns, and you do your CrossFit. I'll do my jiu-jitsu and we'll, you know, compare notes after.
Right.
He declined.
Of course he did.
But CrossFit itself, don't have a problem with.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Another thing when I'm thinking about movement is not only, you know, once you've identified your physical fitness aspect of it, anything you do in life, we always tell people dress for success, right? Dressing for survivability is the same way. And I'm going to bring up skinny jeans again. If you had to, you know, do the gravel dance with somebody out back and you're wearing skinny jeans, things are probably not going to go so well for you. So, you know, likewise, if you're wearing jeans that are hanging down around the below your butt cheeks, you want to be wearing stuff that you can move in. You want to be wearing stuff that, you know, I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and buy the old fashioned Chuck Norris action stretch jeans with the, you know, the elastic crotch so you can roundhouse kick somebody, but you need to be aware. And some people can't wear that on a day-to-day basis. You might be wearing a suit and some, you know, $600 leather Italian shoes. And if you are, just be aware of the fact of what your limitations are going to be while you're dressed like that. I saw a really good cover photo on a magazine not too long ago, and it was one of these prepper magazines, and I don't remember what the name of it was, but it showed a guy and there's flames in the background, like something, some great catastrophe has happened, and he is in traffic in his car, and he's getting out of his car, and he's got a little bug-out bag over his shoulder, and he's dressed in a suit and tie with the $600 Italian shoes, but he's got a pair of lightweight hiking boots tied to the top of his little bag that he has in his car. So that shows that he had the forethought to be aware of what his limitations were going to be while he was dressed for work, and he had a way of addressing that. I've lived a great portion of my life as a sandals and cargo shorts guy, but I'm probably one of the only people that I ever know that when I go to buy a new pair of sandals and I try them in the store, I run around the store and I kind of box jump up and down on the little benches where people are trying their shoes on because I want to know what the limitations of those sandals are.
I could just picture the people like trying on their sandals and shoes in peace. And you're like, let's see if these things can handle a sprint and a box jump. How about a shoot to take someone down? You never know when you're going to have to shoot to take someone down in sandals.
Yeah, I've never had to do that. But actually, I actually did try on a pair of sandals one time. I think it might have been in an REI. And I asked the guy's permission to run over the climbing wall and test him out. And he was like, yeah, okay, dude, whatever floats your boat. So,
yeah, I think that I asked you after our first interview, I asked you, Mike, I was going to do some tactical training. I didn't want to show up, you know, looking like a fool, because this is not my world and this is your world. So you were nice enough to give me some recommendations. Can you make some recommendations, equipment recommendations for anyone listening who wants to equip themselves properly?
So kind of starting from the ground up, Merrell makes great boots.
How do you spell that again?
M-E-R-R-I-L-L.
Okay.
Boots. Those are great. They've been a staple in the Spec Ops community for a lot of years. Chris Kyle wore them. You saw him wear them in the movie American Sniper. I own the exact same pair of boots along with the low-quartered version of those same boots. A Solo, A-S-O-L-O, makes some great, really great boots. And Salomons are actually my new favorites. S-A-L-O-M-O-N, I believe is the way it's spelled, makes great boots. Keep in mind that anytime you get a boot, the more you're going to get in durability and rigidity, also the more you're going to have in weight. I always advocate for people to kind of shoot somewhere in the middle. If you get footwear that's too light, that means it's not going to give you as much support. It's more likely to tear, more likely to fall apart on you. Whereas if you get something that's extremely sturdy, it's going to be so heavy that it's going to make you really tired. Along with good boots comes good socks. There's a lot of great sets of hiking and endurance socks out there that are super absorbent. You want something that's going to wick the sweat away. When it comes to pants, I'm a big advocate of all the different types of cargo pants that are out there. 511 is probably the most well-known. They've got a little bit of a bad rap over the last couple years.
Why?
Because so many people are buying them. Not because they're a bad product. They're a great product. I have like three or four pairs in my closet. But
posers, they kind of became, in other words.
Exactly. I was going to say that. They kind of became known as the poser pants because, you know, a lot of us bought them and then a lot of other people started buying them too. Carhartt makes a lot of great clothing for whatever you want to do. Very rugged, very durable stuff. I own three different pair of Carhartt jeans. You know, I own the work pants, I own the regular jeans, and I own the insulated jeans to ride on my motorcycle in the wintertime. Carhartt makes some great products. Those professional fishing shirts are always great. Anything made by Columbia are good products. You know, you want to avoid a lot of cotton stuff. And I'm kind of delving a little bit into like, you know, full-on survivalist stuff here. But the point being, you want stuff, you know, that doesn't fit your body too snugly, that is going to be comfortable in varying degrees of weather and has some durability to it, I think would be the most important thing. And whatever you get, because it's going to vary depending on whether you're living, you know, where you are, Ted, in South Florida or up north somewhere on the Pacific Northwest. You're talking about different environments, different climates. Whatever you get, you know, wear it out on the weekend. See how it feels. See how it adjusts in doing different things. Squat down and change a tire wearing it. You know, we call it, you know, shaking down your kit. Jump up and down. See, you know, wow, these pants fit great in the store, but I went outside and, you know, once I walked a mile in them, hey, they're riding really high in the crotch or they're rubbing me in the back of the knee or whatever it might be. It's important that whatever you get, you shake it down and you don't find out when it's too late that, wow, this really was not the best choice.
Yeah, solid recommendations. And real quick about the shoes, then I want to move on. But I noticed that when I did my tactical training classes, nobody wears black boots. It's all coyote or desert tan.
Not anymore.
So no. Don't be that guy, right? Black boot
right.
guy.
Don't be the black boot guy and don't be the guy blousing his pants into the boots guy. You definitely don't want to be that guy.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. Okay, now we're saving shooting for the last. What was after movement?
So after movement, we're talking about communicate. And in the traditional sense, when we talk about that in the military, you know, we meant it to mean literally what it meant, which was, you know, communicate with the men to your left and right, communicate with your leadership. But when I'm talking about it, I mean communicate with your environment. So you're really using all of your five senses. And this should be any and everywhere that you go. You should, number one, know your environment. And, you know, we're talking about the, you know, the five W's here. Who is in your environment? You know, when you walk into Starbucks, who's in there? Who's in line? Who's sitting to my left? Who's standing in line in front of me? Who's sitting over to my right? Who's there? What's there? What are the objects that are in my environment? Are there things in my environment that don't belong in my environment? You know, things that could potentially be used as a weapon. Is there a guy who looks like he's in his mid-50s sweating profusely and he's pushing a baby carriage that doesn't have a baby in it? You know, that's something that's unusual. Where are the exits? Where are the windows? Where are people located? What's the amount of space between me and the objects around me? Where's my egress going to be if I have to get out of here? Is it going to be right back behind me where I walked in, or is there another way out? you always talk about when you're talking about the five W's. So that's just kind of making a note to yourself, kind of the temporal relationships of people and things. You know, is there one guy who, yeah, even though he's already picked up his coffee, he's kind of standing off in that same spot a lot longer than anybody should be standing, you know, kind of hunched over his coffee, doing something a little bit funny. Just be aware of that's been there for a while, or hey, that wasn't there a second ago. That's what I mean when I'm talking about the when. The why is pretty obvious. You know, everybody in your environment, you should be able to pretty much sum up from looking at them why they're in your environment. You know, if you're in the store shopping, people should be there to shop. They shouldn't be there to do other things. We always talk about how when we talk about the five W's, and you can't really apply the how necessarily to other people, but you can apply it to yourself. So how am I going to navigate my way through this environment? If something bad does happen, how am I going to address that threat, or how am I going to get away from that threat? The other thing that we talk about when we talk about communicating is having a communication plan and a contingency plan. That applies in some situations, but not all. And in an instance where it does apply in that situation, say that I pulled up to that Starbucks with my wife, and my wife's in the car because she's making a phone call, or she's in the car with our dog, or whatever it might be. I am going to have a communication plan with her. What if I go into the Starbucks and I realize I've walked right into the middle of a robbery or something like that? This can be nothing more than saying, all right, I'm going into Starbucks. I'll be out in 5 minutes. If I'm not back out in 5 minutes and I don't text you to tell you why I'm not back out in 5 minutes, consider calling 911.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. And that sounds a little bit extreme, but this is something that goes all the way back to my Ranger training. We always have what was called a 5-point contingency plan anywhere we went, you know, where I'm going, who I'm taking with me, when I'm going to be back, what to do if I don't come back, what you're going to do if you make enemy contact while I'm gone. Unfortunately, that's something that's kind of so ingrained in me. I do it on a watered down scale almost every day. Some people would say that's a good thing. Sometimes I think my wife gets a little bit tired of hearing a 5-point contingency plan from me every time I'm leaving the house. But but it's, you know, it's something that's important. You know, it's, we live in a time now where it wasn't unusual for you not to talk to a direct family member for a long period of time, even if that was your spouse. Now that we have cell phones, if I make one or two calls to my wife and those calls aren't returned, or she doesn't text and say, hey, I'm on a business call, I right away start to think that something's up. Maybe that's just my suspicious nature, but that's how I am. So we live in a time now where when it comes to communication, you know, use communication, use these tools that we have here in the 21st century as the advantage that they could be. And don't just anticipate, you know, because somebody's not returning your calls, well, they must be busy. Well, do they normally return your calls? Do they normally text you? You know, this could be a sign that, you know, someone very important to you could be in danger. And have a plan to set up emergency texts with people, you know, things that are code words for, oh my God, I'm at work. And there's, you know, very, very recently, somebody in an active shooter scenario texted to their girlfriend, active shooter. I think it was the recruiting officer in Chattanooga. He texted active shooter to his girlfriend. And she thought it was like some type of, you know, was he playing a joke, or you having an active shooter drill? You know, what do you mean by active shooter?
Wow.
Do you want to have more energy through the day? How about feeling better and getting more things done? In our free online workshop, you will learn 11 health and fitness secrets to boost your energy, get more things done while you're super busy. Visit legendarylifepodcast.com and register now. Free for a limited time.
Is that something very, very recently, like after Oregon?
No, actually, I think it was before. It was the one that we had at the recruiting station in, I guess it was Chattanooga. I want to say it was 6 months ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there's,
yeah, I don't,
there's it was, a lot it was of a lot, them.
Yeah, it was a lot smaller scale, so I don't think it got the publicity that a lot of these got. Certainly in the military world it did, because the, you know, the big thing, of course, that was brought up was these were active duty military, many of which were actually combat veterans, but because they were unarmed in a recruiting station, they didn't have any way to defend themselves.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'll have to look that up afterward. I didn't hear about that one, but I want to stay on this topic because I think it's really important. I'll tell you, Mike, I don't know if you know this part of my story about my brother being kidnapped and murdered, but do you know that story?
I do know the story, Ted.
Yeah.
It's Wow. I don't know how many of your listeners know about that story, but it's a very heart-wrenching story. It really is.
Yeah. And the reason I'm bringing it up, I don't want to talk too much about it, but it changed me in a lot of ways. And one of the ways is it made me more vigilant and paying more attention to what's going on. And like you said, it wasn't unusual to not have a lot of contact with people before cell phones. But yeah, I'm more on that side as well. I worry, I'm a bit suspicious. And my question is to you, what do you think is crossing the line between just being vigilant and being paranoid to the point that it's kind of interfering with you enjoying life?
Wow, that's a good question. There are those that would say that, you know, that one man's paranoid is another man's prepared. So, you know, it's hard to say. I guess you kind of answered the question in the question, in that if it is interfering, if it is substantially interfering with your quality of day-to-day life, if it's directly impacting that, then at least there is cause to step back and analyze it. It's difficult to say kind of where that line is crossed. You know, I think that's a tough one, Ted. It's hard to say. It's, you know, because if you're that guy and you're that vigilant all the time and the whole neighborhood might think you're the paranoid kook until the day it goes down. And then, hey, guess what? You're the smartest guy on the block now because you were the only one that was prepared. But I think if you're gripped by fear and not leaving your home, I think if you won't eat in a restaurant because of it, I think if every time you're driving from point A to point B, you're doing loops in the Walmart parking lot to see if anybody's following you. And I'm going to tell you, I know guys like that, by the way.
Wow. Okay.
I think you've crossed the line at that point. But, you know, you have to enjoy life. If you don't enjoy life, then the wolves have won. So then there's no point. The wolves have won at that point because you are so gripped by fear that they have reached their objective. And, you know, terrorists are called terrorists for a reason. And if they don't necessarily have to kill you, if they can terrorize you to the point that you so drastically alter your way of life that it's not the way of life that they wanted to destroy anymore, then they've won. And, you know, it's certainly a spectrum. It's hard to say. It's one of those things. A statement that I heard years ago that's on a different subject but kind of applies to this is a guy asked me, he said, you know what the definition of a religious fanatic is? And I said, no. And he said, it's anybody who loves God more than you do. So it's literally a spectrum. So, you know, it's all about my perception looking at what you're doing and then your perception looking back. Sorry, I don't have a better answer.
No,
for you
that's very insightful, actually. And you know what popped into my head, what came to my mind while you're saying that is probability, right? Statistical probability. If I'm in a small town in America and it's not a very populated area, it's not a city, why am I going to be worried about getting robbed? You got to look at statistics. I think statistics of crime and wherever you are or wherever you're going can be very helpful to keep you clear on what your chances of running across something actually are, but still staying on that edge so you're not caught off unaware. One thing I wanted to ask you as well is, do you have a story that you could share that illustrates you putting this communication idea into action and that either thwarted something or stopped something?
As a matter of fact, I do. This was a few years ago. I was visiting with some friends of mine just outside of the Philadelphia area. And we went out to dinner and we went to a dance club in northern Philadelphia. It was actually a Latin dance club. And having spent a lot of time in Central and South America, of course, I speak Spanish. And I believe it or not, I do enjoy Latin dancing, as do my friends.
Nice.
And after, you know, we stayed, of course, until the club closed. And we were all leaving together in a small group. And one of my friends who's in the group has some military experience, but he worked a little bit more in intelligence analyst type stuff and didn't have a lot of field experience. And as we were walking to a car, people parked all up and down the block in all directions. And as we were walking away, I noticed three males in their early 20s leaning with their backs to a wall. And a lot of people were standing outside the club talking, you know, waiting for cabs, saying goodbyes. But as we walked by, I heard them kind of muttering to each other, you know, quiet enough that we couldn't really hear what they were saying. And my friend and his wife were in front of me talking to one another. I noticed that these, out of my peripheral vision, that these guys peeled off and started walking behind us. And right away, I kind of had a picture in my mind of how this was going to go down. They were going to first either ask me if I had money for them for cab fare, or they were going to ask me if I had a cigarette or ask me if I had a light. That was going to get me to turn around and stop, at which time they could do what they were going to do. And all I did is, as we were walking, I didn't even break stride. I looked over my shoulder. I made eye contact with one of them, and I said, "Don't even think about it." And immediately, all three of them got a very surprised expression on their face and took a left. As we were coming to the corner, we went straight, and they just kept walking. And it took about a half a second for my friend to realize what had just happened, but he caught on to it right away. His wife didn't quite catch on to it, and she's like, "What just happened?" And he said, "Don't worry about it. Just get to the car." And we talked about it on the ride home, but that was certainly a case where, you know, like I said, I was aware of my situations, and I saw the who. You know, they were sitting there. The what was, they were just talking to each other. They weren't talking to any girls. They weren't, you know, saying goodbye to any friends. They were, you know, within kind of my cone of movement when they were there. The when was, they were there before I was there, but just conveniently peeled off and followed me as I walked by. And the why to me was pretty evident, that, you know, they wanted to see if they could roll us up and maybe see how much cash they had on us.
Yeah, wow. And I love how that turned out, because it turned out exactly how it should, because predators don't go after predators, they go after prey. And you showed him very clearly that whether he won or lost, there was going to be a price to pay.
Right.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, the sheepdog doesn't necessarily have to tangle with the wolf. Sometimes a growl is all it takes, because the wolf is used to going after soft, cushy prey, and he doesn't want to have to work any harder for his survival than he necessarily has to. And going head-on through a sheepdog is not how he wants to play it.
It's so true, man. You know, some people might get turned off. You know, the guns, the, you know, learning how to shoot, the tactical training, the martial arts. I mean, come on. I'm not a violent person. It's like, well, you can, because I worked as a bouncer for a while too. With the right presence, the right communication, as you call it, you make sure nothing ever happens, because, like you said, they don't look for the baddest, biggest, toughest person to tangle with because they want a challenge. They want something easy, fast, someone they can feel more powerful than, and to get whatever it is they want, rape, money, whatever. And if you happen to be a woman listening, so it's like, yeah, just being vigilant. I love it. And I want to share something really quick, because I think it's important. This doesn't just have to do with violent people and wolves, as we're calling them, as you're calling them, Mike, because there was a really tragic event that happened here, a really tragic situation with a guy walking across the street in Miami Beach, the chef of this restaurant. He had a very great thing going for himself. He was doing very well. He also had a family. He got hit by a car by this drunk girl coming back from a club. And he was walking across the street and got hit by a car. There's hardly any cars at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's when it happened, like very early in the morning. But he was just cruising, walking across the street. Maybe he saw that car. He was like, ah, because a lot of people do this here in Miami Beach. Ah, you're going to stop. You're not going to hit me, which of course she will. Because she doesn't want to go to jail unless she's drunk, which she was, and probably texting some dude, you know, or whatever. And she ended up hitting him and killing him because he wasn't paying attention. You know, she didn't run up on the side of the sidewalk and hit him there. He was just crossing the road. So just even crossing the road in a place where there's a lot of traffic, and if you're like here, a lot of partying people on the roads who may not be paying attention to what they should be paying attention to. This type of information, by the way, I love your breakdown, but this type of information, I see it being relevant to so many different things.
Yeah, situational awareness is just very important, and you illustrate a great point about that individual, and very tragic what happened to him, but sheep-like mentality, and I don't know him, but it certainly sounds like it, you know, the thought that the rule of law and human kindness is going to stop that 2.5-ton vehicle before it impacts with me. And that's realistically, you can't, again, you know, you're depending on outside factors for your safety. You know, internal factors would be, I choose not to cross the road yet, or I cross the road more quickly to get out of the way. You can't, it's all about the internal locus of control. You know, I have to control what I can control to minimize the external factors around me. And I can't depend on anything external, just and trust that it's going to work out.
Yeah, so true. And I'm a little paranoid crossing the road all the time here in Miami Beach because people don't stop at stop signs. People get hit and then the people run afterward. It just happened recently, like a couple days ago. And I don't want to be one of those people. You got to have this situational awareness. So important, Mike. And man, I'm learning a lot listening to you. I love this. I know we're at an hour right now, but I'd love to hear the breakdown of the shooting as well, if you can.
Okay. Sure, we'll jump right into shooting. So now when I'm talking about shooting, I'm talking about obviously exactly what it sounds like. I am talking about firearms, but I'm also talking about all aspects of combat. So that includes the martial arts. And you know, to jump back into moving, you know, we talked about fitness and using martial arts as a vehicle for that. And certainly that's something, you know, if you're talking about starting from the inside out with your offensive weapons, martial arts is a great way to go. Whether you're talking about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, whether you're talking about Krav Maga, whether you're talking about Muay Thai, whatever it might be, just, you know, make sure it's something, you know, practical. Try to stay away from the McDojos. Try to stay away from any place that kids' classes are great, but, you know, any place that you think is maybe a little bit too oriented towards the family competition. You know, you don't want to go to the Ameridote place, right? You want to go to the real martial arts place and learn something that, you know, that's really going to benefit you. And one of the things that turned me off from one of the earlier martial arts that I studied is I kept getting pulled aside in sparring and told, you can't do that in competition because of this. You can't do that in competition because of this. And I said, I'm not training for what I'm going to do in competition. I'm training for what I'm going to do. And they said, well, then we don't want you here. And I said, "That's I respect that, and I don't want to be here." And I took my business elsewhere, and I'm very glad that I did. But we could do a whole show in and of itself on which martial art you should take and what to look out for. But you know, suffice it to say, I think if somebody hasn't, that they should take a martial art.
Okay, cool.
If you're not going to take a martial art, if you're going to do some type of self-defense class, I think that's great. But, you know, a self-defense class is just like anything. It's an introductory class. Nobody's going to master any school on a Saturday, you know, kicking a heavy bag or kicking a guy in a big red padded suit. You might learn a couple more things than you learned before, but if you don't practice them, that you're certainly not going to master that. And that goes hand in hand with when we're talking about weapons. So the first thing you need to do, obviously, if you don't own a weapon already, is pick a weapon. Again, we could do a whole show just on that, or a whole video series just on that. If you were going to hold my feet to the fire, Ted, and ask me right now, like somebody absolutely positively, they're calling me from a gun store, or they're going directly home with it, they have to get a gun right now, I would say a Glock 9mm. If I just absolutely had to say anything, and people listening to this are probably rolling their eyes because there's a lot of anti-Glock people out there. But the advantage of a Glock 9mm, in my mind, are extremely reliable. It's a great product. I own two of them. It's in a caliber that is readily available, very plentiful, and easy for most people to handle as far as how much recoil you're going to get from that pistol. It's a weapon that does not have a thumb safety on it. So it's literally, it's a double action. You just point and squeeze that trigger. So that's one less thing you have to worry about when you're inexperienced and the adrenaline is flowing and there's a real threat, that is a factor. So again, a lot of different factors go into what is the right weapon for you. But if somebody had to have an answer right now, I would say the Glock 9mm.
That's what I have.
That's a good choice.
But I shoot better with my tactical instructor's Smith & Wesson MP.
That's a great gun too. That's a really, really good gun. So, and that's in 9mm also?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something, I'm a big advocate of that gun as well, and I'll tell you why. So that's a single stack magazine, so it has a lot slimmer profile. And especially for somebody living where you live, which Glock model do you have?
The 19.
So you have the 19. I have a 17, and I have the 26. It's a double stack, correct?
It is.
It's pretty fat. Yeah, pretty fat. Yeah, so the 19 is a double stack.
I know I'm firing off the answers quickly, but I know a lot less about guns than how fast I'm answering. So,
okay, no worries. The advantage of a single stack pistol is it's a lot slimmer profile for somebody that lives where you do, Ted, or somebody that lives in hotter climes and, you know, wants to go out in the, you know, in the cargo shorts and the loose t-shirt. Sometimes that's a better option. And that's a big factor in, you know, hey, would it be great? Is the 50 caliber Desert Eagle just an awesome hand cannon? Yes, it is. Is it going to be impossible to conceal when you go to the movie theaters in a pair of shorts and a tank top? Yes, it is. What you want the weapon for impacts, you know, what you're going to get too. And I'm an advocate actually of having a different gun that's your nightstand gun and a gun that you take outside, because, you know, the nightstand gun, you might choose to put some optics or a light on it or a laser. And if you're defending in the home, you might, although I don't advocate this, I'm going to say I do not advocate shooting through doors, but there are instances where it has happened. But, you know, as a minimum, you want something that's going to make a lot of noise and make put a really big hole in somebody, and not having to carry it with you all day and not having to worry about concealability is a factor in that. So I am a person who advocates your nightstand gun maybe being the big hand cannon with a laser and or light on it, and the gun you carry day to day maybe being a little bit smaller, a 9mm. I'm not a big, huge fan of a 380, but for the ladies or for somebody who is going to wear a lot of clothing that won't necessarily allow a lot of portability, maybe is a 380 is a good option. But a 9mm is certainly a better choice for moving around day to day. And that's what I carry from day to day. Whatever you get, you need to train on that weapon. Just owning it, it's not a magic talisman. Just even if you have it and get your concealed carry permit, that's not going to ward off evil spirits. You really need to train on that gun. And this needs to be a normal part of your routine. You need to be checking off on your monthly calendar, this is the Saturday that I go get some range time in, because that's a very perishable skill. Even I don't even want to know how many rounds that I've put down range in my lifetime, but it's still, even for me, it's a perishable skill. If I haven't been to the range in 6 to 8 weeks, I go out there and I certainly notice it. So, you know, train to mastery, get an instructor, get a reputable instructor out there, you know, talk to other people that would have worked with that instructor, watch them shoot. Just like I wouldn't trust a BJJ black belt who didn't roll with his students, I wouldn't trust a pistol instructor who won't shoot in front of me. So, you know, that's something, it might sound a little bit funny to him when you ask him to shoot, to show you how to shoot by shooting, but most of them should know why you're doing that and should be very comfortable in doing so.
Yeah, no, and it's so important, because I trained with a few different people before I settled on my final guy here in Miami. And the first guy was very sketchy. He was actually good, but he was just sketchy, real sketchy. And he worked for some other guy who worked for the British, who was in the British Army. I wouldn't be surprised if that guy had killed a few people or at least tortured people. Very shady. And then the second one, it wasn't private. It was a group. And we were doing all this cool stuff, but it's like, I don't even know if I'm shooting anything. I'm just doing these drills, and we're not even able to distinguish. We don't have our own target. We're all shooting at the same target. You have no idea if you're just doing some movie moves or something good for Hollywood, or if you're actually hitting something. And
that's an excellent point, Ted, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the things that I tell people specifically to look out for, is if you go out with a firearms instructor. And, you know, I hear these stories, people coming back, they're like, oh, it was so great. I went and took this class. He had me driving up and down the range and shooting out the window and all this stuff. And I'm like, this was your first day shooting? Yes. And you were shooting out the window? Yes. Okay. Number one, that's, you're not training to do a drive-by, so that's not something you needed to do. Number two, that's way beyond anything you should be training for. And, you know, that's Sergeant Major Vendon and I talked about it when I had him on my show. That's special operations troops are special because they know the basics very, very well. The shoot, move, communicate is basic soldier stuff. You find me a SEAL or a Delta operator who's been successful, and they know all the basics of how to use their weapons from the basic shooting stances very, 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 very well. And that's the strong foundation that you build everything else off of. You know, no one should be going out their very first day and doing a lot of walking and shooting. The first thing you need to know is how to shoot very, very basically, nice and slow from a stationary position. And if you're going to a place and they have you doing Mel Gibson style flips and rolls, and you know, they put a gun in each hand and do this and do that, you know, Lara Croft Tomb Raider style stuff, that's not who you want to be learning from. Those people probably get a lot of return customers because people go out there, they get a huge adrenaline rush. They felt like they were in the movies. But like you said, that's not how you learn the basics. And that's not how you get realistic feedback on whether or not you're actually engaging that target properly. Most of these armed conflicts that occur are, and somebody's going to Google this number, and I don't have the Google in front of me, so I'm probably wrong. I want to say it's 17 feet or less as the average distance for an armed non-combat encounter. So we're talking, you know, something happens between a law enforcement officer and a subject, or between an assailant and somebody. And I believe in crime situations, it's even closer than that. I want to say it's almost always less than 10 feet. So before you're shooting these long distance targets on the fly from a moving car, you know, good shooting stance, good foot placement on the ground, holding the weapon properly in two hands and engaging that target are the most important things you can learn right out of the gate.
Wow, that is a lot of information and great information at that. And from someone who doesn't just practice it, but he's lived it, he's fought in Central America, South America, been part of the drug war, former Army Ranger, Green Beret, Special Forces operator. Mike, thanks so much for coming here today and being on the show and sharing all this, because it's just, man, we're in these times. It's great times. I think we're living in one of the best times in history. But at the same time, you need to be aware. You need to have that situational awareness of your immediate surroundings, as well as being aware of what's going on in the world enough so that you know what type of threats you face and what you should be prepared for. So you just helped everyone listening take that up a notch and become more of a sheepdog. And I was thinking about it as we were talking. I'm like, it's a continuum, isn't it? You know, sheepdog, because I'm no Navy SEAL or like you, but I'm definitely don't consider myself a sheep at all. So you just helped me take it up in another level and everyone listening. So I thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I mean, the most important thing, a sheep never asks themselves what they are. So the first step is asking yourself where you fit into that continuum. And if you've done so, you've already made the first step out of being a sheep, undoubtedly.
I like that. Well, Mike, what about, let's wrap things up. And we didn't even get to talk too much about your show. I want to know where I can find your show, The Mind of a Warrior. I highly suggest you listen to Mike's show. It is amazing. I'll have a link in the show notes. But where can they go and find that?
So I'm on iTunes, and I believe I'm also on Podbay and Stitcher. It's Mind of the Warrior with Dr. Mike Simpson. If you can't remember that, or you can't find it on any of those places, if you follow me on Twitter at @MMA_doctor, I also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/HoplonMedical, HOPLON Medical. That's probably going to change, but right now that's the website. But follow me on Twitter is probably the easiest way. That's where most people hit me up. And you just find me there. And there's always a link to my latest episode on my timeline on Twitter. And there's also a link to my Facebook page on my profile there as well.
Well, cool. I'll definitely have all that on the show notes. And Mike, what about some final words just to encourage the listeners, encourage the guy listening right now who wants to become more of a sheepdog, who wants to embrace this mind of a warrior?
I just want everybody to know that, you know, situational awareness does not take the enjoyment out of life. You know, don't think that by looking up from your cell phone, looking up from your latte and being aware of the threat that somehow that's going to diminish life. I think it's just the opposite. I think being situational aware enhances life. And, you know, it doesn't mean you're paranoid. It means you know what's out there. It means you know how to protect yourself and protect your family. And the best words that I can tell people are those same words that I sign off my show with every week. Live life like a warrior.
Powerful words. Dr. Mike Simpson, thank you so much for being on the show. Always appreciate it and looking forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thank you very much, Ted.